welcome everyone to the latest installment of the SUS News Podcast Series, where we talk about news and discuss the applications relevant to the global unmanned technology community. I'm your program host, Patrick Egan, and as we always do, let's say hello and welcome to our co-host, Mr. Gene Robinson. Hey, Gene, how's it going?
Hello, Patrick, and my dear viewers and listeners, I guess it's listeners, I'll apologize for making us late this morning. I was out doing the Dawn Patrol thing at the Forensics Anthropology Research Facility out there, still working on that, detecting those clandestine graves. So I was out there early, and, you know, contrary to popular belief, the Texas Hill Country is just not completely covered with 5G yet. So I couldn't get dialed in. So that's my excuse, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, 5G, 4G. I know that's, you know, that was, and one of the subjects today will be the UTM.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah,
they had the network UTM. And it's like, I mean, as soon as you get, even here in California, Northern California, you get off the main roads or whatever, and it goes away. And I even have this hiking app, you know, oh, you know, you're mapped and you use it on your cell phone. Okay, so I'm out in the backcountry and there's no service out there. So it's kind of, I'm back to the compass and the map, which is interesting. That's a tough one, and especially, you know, the magnetic North Pole is changing. So some of these maps are, you know, 20 years old and the declination is off. So it makes for an interesting time, but gives you something to do in between.
The fact that you can, that you can still orienteer using a compass, Patrick, it just makes you a Renaissance man. You know, most people just use their cell phones.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, if that system goes down, or the GPS system goes down, what are you going to do? But you don't want to get lost with me. I mean, because I'm not going to say that I'm that good. I think I'm good, but I don't know how good I am. No, I usually don't get lost, but, you know, touch wood. Anyway, so, yeah, so, and then, you know, one other thing, I was actually discussing the work at the body farm with Hawkeye, and some of those bodies have, they have, like, caging or wire over them, right, to deter animal, let's say, involvement. I mean, isn't that true?
That's, you are correct, sir. And well, it depends on what sort of study they're doing. As a matter of fact, summer before last, I was involved with a small animal predation program where they placed half a dozen or so volunteers out there and left them on the surface completely clothed, and they studied just exactly what kind of activity there was. They had game cams, and of course I was out there flying the drone and, you know, taking pictures, and apparently it was a very good PhD presentation, or it was either a doctorate or a master's, I'm not sure which, but apparently it was good. Yeah, so yeah, they put cages over them, you know, and if they just want to, you know, watch for insects, and if not, then they leave them in the open and we watch what goes on there. And no, of course, with ours, we actually had another placement day before yesterday, and my job is to go out there every day at, oh my God, 30 before the sun comes up, and see what sort of heat signatures we pick up that, you know, come percolating up through the soil. So some interesting science, you know, and I think it's going to be a game changer because we've already figured out some things that you know, our little drones can do to find those clandestine graves.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I'm sure all of it is, you know, you get, let's say, past the initial factor, and then, you know, start learning. I'm sure it's pretty interesting. But, yeah, I thought I remember you saying that, you know, because I'm sure, you know, nobody's going to let usually, you know, my experience in the nature thing is nobody's going to let anything, let's say, go. When there's a resource out there, they're like, you know, no, there's no grocery store to go to. So
No, and they are very opportunistic, and, you know, some are carnivores and some are herbivores and some are both.
Right. Well, that's interesting. I wanted to, reflect on the year that was 2020 and then also talk about some things moving forward in 2021. But, and there's a lot of subjects that we could talk about. You know, one of the big ones that phone's been ringing off the hook is the RID thing. I don't know if you read the short tome that was the rule. Did you look at that? Did you peruse it?
I did, as a matter of fact. I looked it over, and of course, I'm looking at it from a public safety eye. And there's a lot of unanswered questions that that we're pondering as well.
Yeah, I don't think, and as I kind of said early on, I do not believe that this is the gateway to flying over people and beyond visual line of sight. It rang true. I got, because I've been saying it for a while. If you don't have certification of these aircraft systems, the RID doesn't ensure security or safety over
no,
people.
No, it just identifies who smacked the person on the ground.
Exactly. But, then there's also issues with security as far as I'm concerned, because everybody knows that Wi-Fi and Bluetooth are spoofable and hackable. I mean, we've known this for a long time. And, I guess the FAA is late to the party on that one. But this is not secure at all. It's so poorly put together and planned. I think it really kind of helps to illustrate where we're at in the airspace integration thing. It also Congress came out and said, we want 90 days to tell us where you're going with this beyond visual line of sight thing. And I think people forget, that the Congress passed in the 2012 reauthorization into law that the FAA would integrate all drones into the NAS in September of 2015. You remember that?
I do. I remember that.
And the FAA said air traffic control. This is how stupid this is. They just came out and said, well, ATC is not going to be ready. So go pound sand. Oh, really? Why aren't they going to be ready? No real explanation. They knew the deadline was coming. They thumbed their nose at the Congress, and the lawmakers. There was no data to support their assertions or assumptions, let's say, as far as I didn't see anything, although they're not very public with their data. So, here we are, 2020, 5 years late on that. We've got this RID thing. It's as far as I'm concerned, it's piss poor. It doesn't facilitate any of the goals that they said that it would. And it was really predicated on, shafting the hobbyist. And now we see on the DAC that the AMA doesn't even have representation on the DAC. People keep talking, go ahead.
Well, that was another thing that you failed to mention about 2020. You and I both applied for the DAC and we didn't qualify.
Yeah, and I did ask about that because I sent mine in. I'm impartial. I don't really have any products to sell. I've got vast experience with all of the standards groups globally. Was on the small UAS arc. Nope. So if you look at the people that did get on there, some of them have lobbyists, and that's another thing I wanted to touch on. I think people think, these lobbyists are experts. They're not really experts. They're connected. And they do, for your six figures or whatever you're paying them, are able to, they do quid pro quo. There's favors for the USIO. They tell people to do errands for them and they do and whatnot. So you can get a little bit of inside baseball on that deal. So, one of the other things I've been rebelliating about for years is that it would appear that the Chinese have more say in the rulemaking for the U.S. NAS than, let's say, your citizenry. And that would be the unaffiliated hobbyist and now even the AMA. The AMA, we got to play nice to have a seat at the table. The AMA got shafted so hard. I mean, I sent Chad and Rich, I don't know if Rich retired, and the other leadership at AMA an email, which is part of the long trail of emails for years, asking them what the plan was. And so I just emailed them yesterday, one word, winning. It's that bad. So, you know, now you're on the, basically on the reservation, which you're grandfathered in. We've talked about this before. I don't, you know where you live. If land is starting to get expensive, it here where I live in California, 10 acres that's close to a road with power, ADA equipped bathrooms, and all the rest of that stuff, very expensive. I do not see lots of new fields in the future. I really don't.
No.
How about Texas?
No.
What do you think?
We're blessed with enough open areas that we can get away with a lot of stuff. And of course, you know that, you know, the enforcement arm of the FAA has been pretty lax. Now, in the larger major metropolitan areas, I think you're going to find that the hobby is, if they do start pushing it, it's going to be dead. They won't survive.
Well, and that, you know, is the shot in the foot heard around the world. I mean, you know, you see there's regulation in the EU and in, you know, UK and, you know, all these different places. And it's what I would call draconian. You know, the other thing is obviously we don't have expertise. Well, people have to know this that are on the DAC. I mean, you'd have to be a...
Don't overstep that one. you could. You
Well, yeah, that's a family show. But the thing is you know, a traditional RC hobby is self-limiting. You know, you fly beyond visual line of sight, and you're either going to lose your aircraft or crash. So really what you have is you have the quadcopter folks basically claiming that they're RC hobbyists, and you know, I'm just out here hobbyist doing whatever I want to do, but that's not your traditional RC hobby. And I think that could have been carved out, you know, no autonomous aids, you know, it very easy to fix. I think talking to other people, really, the FAA needed the numbers of the hobbyists to be certificated or, you know, registered or whatever, to make it look like they had a problem. And I've done stories about that with the cumulative numbers of registrations and even pilot certificates. If you look at who is in compliance with the FARs, the numbers are a lot less than what's on the FAA's webpage now. Which I'm working on a story, so I have those actual numbers right now. Yeah, you got 1,000,756,885 drones registered, according to the FAA, and that was off of their website December 15th. And remember, you know, there was an estimate that there were going to be 7 million drones registered by, I think, 2020. And so we are 5 million short. How many of those 1.7 million drones are sitting in closets and are not, you know, let's say, registered to fly? And it's the same with the remote pilot certificates. You know, those are cumulative numbers. They've got 204,796 remote pilot certified, and that's from the FAA's website. But how many of those people are actually, let's say, current? So that's a cumulative number. So, I think that the problem has been a little overblown, you know. What do you think?
I have to question the numbers, to be quite honest with you. I mean, don't you think? I mean, there are a lot more folks out there flying than are registered, I'm sure.
I'm sure that there's that. But what I think is what we have here is a compliance issue. And then I also think we have the sky is falling issue.
Now, Patrick, we know that when we were grounded from 2006 on, that there were people out there that were killing it, making money, and they were non-compliant as they could be, but there they were. And well, those same people, if they have the wherewithal, are going to be continuing that same thing.
Oh, and they are. I mean, basically, that's another, you know, I think self-evident truth here is that really there is not, let's say, enough work in the visual line of sight envelope to, let's say, sustain the investment that's needed to, you know, say, let's say, come up with domestic hardware solutions, even software solutions besides, you know, app-based stuff. It's gonna be hard. And then when you get into the certified aircraft, which is another subject I wanted to talk about, I think it's going to even be tougher for people, especially if you see like what we have in this, you know, remote ID thing, where basically DJI got a mandate that their existing system, a broadcast, is going to work. You know, there's going to be there. That's another thing is, you know, there's patents and whatnot. So these are, you know, very difficult obstacles to overcome. And I think the only way that you're going to get this by is through a couple of means. And one is, you know, a greed and a blind eye, or just people that are in over their head. And I'm going to say, you know, right now I got to, you know, throw out a qualifier. I am not an aviation law expert, but there are so many people in this business that are going for the Part 135 and the drone delivery, and they're paying a lot of money for bad advice. And hopefully that'll be one of the stories that's coming out in 2021. There are going to be a lot of experts and advocates, and even the FAA are going to have egg all over their face. That's coming. It'll be like, you know, the Precision Hawk story, times probably a factor of five, and it ought to be interesting. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people will be in a situation where they spent a lot of VC money, good money after bad. But, you know, that's how I think that this goes on, you know. And I'm starting to think that it's just like some sort of revolving VC-funded cash register or casino where people are using their money you know, when you buy houses and you spread it around and you get, you know, you get to be on, pay to be on the Forbes 40 under 40 or, you know, whatever you want to pay to be a part of. And, you know, you look like you're a visionary, a technology visionary, which is another thing we could go on to. But, you know, there's a little bit to unpack there. I mean, what do you think? I mean, when you see this this regulation that comes out in policy and whatnot, I mean, how do you rationalize it?
I don't know. As a man pilot, you know, we watched the same thing with ADS-B. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw that, they mandated that it had to be done by 20, and they gave us, you know, incentives like a $500 incentive to have your plane converted. And they said much the same thing, that ATC was not ready.
Mm-hmm.
They still, you know, I fully expected that the 2020 mandate would be extended, and they didn't. And the ATC managed, I guess, I haven't heard anything on the inside there, but I think we're in a very same similar situation with this RID. And you know, I'm wondering just how much is the final rule going to really change before it becomes final? You know what I mean?
No, that's a good point. And you know, something else that I wanted to touch on when you finish your thought, and I want people to realize this too. You know, just, you have to re-educate people, you know, without sounding like I'm wearing the Mao jacket. You know, people have to realize that you have a lot of, you know, your perspective on this is like a 20-year thing. Plus, you're a man, guy. So when you know, we're talking about this, there's lots of experience here. They're speaking from lots of experience. I do think that there are going to be changes, and I think that there were changes right up until this rule was published. And I say that because, you know, people were like kind of going back and forth. There's going to be broadcast. They're going to be networked, UTM. Now, the, you know, and if it was networked, I could see that it might get us a little closer to the beyond visual line of sight thing. However, I think that the cohort that the FAA had put together was looking for a return on investment. Some of these cell phone companies have been, involved in buying startups that keep pivoting their way to profit. I mean, every 6 months or a year, oh, we're going to pivot into this, you know. So you aren't making any money over there. Now you think you're going to pivot into this and you're going to make money. So I did get a call from a woman that owned a company, and she told me, oh, you know, this UTM, it's going to be network, and we're working with T-Mobile, and it's going to roll out in 2021, and the RID part of it's going to be free because you'll have your package for data. So we're just going to throw RID in there for free. And I'm like, well, that's interesting. So I have to buy this system and pay this monthly subscription to be in on this. Then, you know, so that got dropped probably in October or November. So things changed right up into the publication of the rule. And I think they had to drop it because I hear that there are changes coming in, I think either end of January or February. And so they had to get this thing, rush it and get it out. But I don't know if the patent that Kenji, you know, filed, I mean, that's a whole other one I want to talk about. But anyway, I don't know if they thought that was too hard of a sell or it was going to be too expensive, if there were patents covering it or what the problem was, but they dropped it late in the game. Did you hear anything about that?
Well, I mean, you probably should explain to our listeners what that patent was about and how it came about and where the knowledge for that patent arose from. That might help our listeners a little bit. You want to elucidate on that?
Well,
go for it. You've got the inside scoop, so let's hear it.
Well, you know, from what I ascertained out of the story is, you know, the patent was filed in 2018. Supposedly, it came from a white paper that was given to the FAA as part of the remote ID and tracking art that they put together. My thing with it, you know, and I don't want to beat up on poor Kenji, but, you know, his deal was he was out there on the boards telling people he was couch surfing and, you know, I'm on here as part as a, you know, representative of Doug, you know, drug users group. And, you know, this is a grassroots thing. Well, that's not really the case because he was peddling his own RID in that effort. And then you go out and you file a patent. And I got to be honest with you. I mean, I talk to people all the time that have patents or provisional patents or whatever that they've been trying to get years. And, you know, they've got to struggle and go back and forth and whatever else. And it looks, you know, from the file date that this patent came through in less than 2 years. Maybe the stars aligned and it just happened. I got FOIA requests into the FAA that are older than that still haven't been, you know, answered. So, and that's relatively simple. Yeah, you sit at the, you know, keyboard and answer the question. So those are some insights into that. I, as I recall, my participation in these panels and action teams and the rest of this whatever, you know, they want you to sign NDAs. You can't talk about it. You're not supposed to, you know, use IP. People are supposed to protect their IP, things like that in these efforts. This just seems bizarre to me. What's your take?
And the kind of things that we participated in the past, we always kept it on the QT when it was necessary to do so. The world is changing, Patrick, and maybe it's just as that ethic is not a priority anymore. Maybe that's kind of the way I see it, and it's unfortunate, but I wished I would have done something, to be honest with you, like that. And chances are I might be sitting on that, you know, beach in Tahiti with the drink with the umbrella in it at this point. But it just didn't work out that way.
Listening to Jimmy Buffett.
That's it. You know, that's it.
There's shrimp on the barbecue there. I guess that's what you do is you use these things as a, for personal gain. I don't know. I thought we were trying to build a optimistic aerospace ecosystem. You know, maybe I didn't get the memo or something. I don't know, but I will say that GA and it as a whole in this country is the estimates that they did 20 years ago and 10 years ago, and by they I mean the FAA, or where GA would be, are nowhere near where they estimated it to be. I mean, I was reading an article about the LSA sales, even in 2019, were in the hundreds. And you remember, we got the rah-rah speech, I think it was Earl Lawrence was at the ASTM thing in Reno and talking about how great that the LSA standard was going to save GA, and, oh, God, it's going to be great. And it's not saving GA. The only thing it really did was make the medical standards, let's say, less stringent. And then I think since then, even the GA stuff has kind of come down. So whatever. Those aircraft are really expensive, even though they're using community-based standards. Remember that? I don't know if you remember that. I remember them talking $35,000.
Very well remember that. And, yeah, you're right. And I will have to admit that the relaxing of the medical standards for manned aviation has certainly helped me. I mean, I don't have to go pay $150 every, 2 years to get it done. I can do the wellness thing and be on down the road. But
well, I even remember under the COVID thing. Remember they were busting your chops on the medical thing to fly, get the COA, and it's ridiculous.
I had to have a second class.
I know, dude. Yeah, to fly around some foam. The whole deal, let's say, defies logic. But, that's part of the perspective that we bring on to this. So, anyway, the LSA numbers are way down. The aircraft are in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. I think the larger LSA manufacturers, Chinese-owned, the whole deal is nuts. So what we've seen is the administrative government in action, or administrative rulemaking in action, where people can't be fired or held accountable or whatever else. So basically, you just get in there and do whatever the hell you want. You make it up as you go along, and I don't really care what anyone says or thinks. I should have a PhD in this, because I've been watching this nonsense for 20 years. And this is just how it goes. You go there, people talk about that seat at the table. The FAA dangles carrots in front of people. They think they're going to get some sort of mandate where they're going to make money. And then they pull the Judas routine on the industry. And there is, I don't know if it's a Judas protection program that they have for these people. You shaft the hobbyist, you could come on. We're going to talk about letting you have a mandate, which was happening here, I believe, in the cohort with the RID thing. Everyone was clamoring and climbing all over themselves to come up with a solution where, you could do their RID. And eventually what's going to happen here is, how are you going to collect your landing fees? And that's one of the systems that I think that some people tried to roll into this. Is, how are we going to collect the landing fees to pay for that? And I think that's another thing the droners don't understand is, somebody's going to have to pay for all of this eventually.
Exactly.
And you're not going to pay fuel tax.
You don't get something for nothing.
What?
Yeah.
I thought it was free. Yeah, I haven't really seen much free. But, those are things that I think people need to talk about. It's the same deal with the UTM, I mean, who's going to pay for this? And that whole deal, too. There's so many issues with UTM. And one of the main ones, because I don't want to get into all the technical stuff, because there are still, a lot of technical issues to overcome. But, let's just look at, the work that NASA did. And some people, you're critical of NASA. And it's like, okay, if you want to say that because you don't want to talk about, the shortcomings of the, let's say, FAA's regulatory framework, fine. Do whatever you want to do. But we have two tests. We had the one in Reno and we had the one down there in Corpus Christi. And in both instances, the, let's say, new kids on the block followed the procedures, filed no TAMs, was on, and they had the added bonus of being on the national news, local news, and everybody in the town talking about these tests that they were going to do out there. And in both instances, you had non-cooperative, certified aircraft, certificated pilots invade, non-cooperative, you know, invade the airspace. And that is the tried and true, blessed FAA process. So, you know, what are we supposed to deduce from that? Are there shortcomings? Somebody slipped up? Two in a million? I don't know. What do you think?
Well, there you go. I mean, there's a lot of this is done by discovery. And I think a lot of the regulations that we have in front of us, even though they started with good intent and on paper it looked good, by the time the rubber met the road, it was, okay, this is not going to work. And that's what happened.
Yeah, you know, even in back to the NASA thing, I mean, I got on the interplanetary poo list telling the NASA people that they would not achieve their goals with the money budgeted. And people got nasty about it, you know. It's just when you're going up against the glacier that is the FAA, man, you got to, I don't know, billions, you know, get ready to spend billions because these guys just move so slow. And in this meandering that you just talked about, you know, we had the best laid plans of mice and men, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. And then when we get it, it's just, it's not even worth the money that the taxpayer got fleeced on the deal. And, you know, that's my thing. And I'm sorry, but I think if you got a room of actual SMEs, engineers, people that actually knew aviation law, and they're out there, you know, you put them in a room with a whiteboard, I think they could sit down and actually come up with a, let's say, plausible integration roadmap. But I just don't see anybody wanting to do that. And it may be a thing where nobody wants to work themselves out of a job. That's a big one. Don't want to work myself out of a job. And again, you know, if you're bringing in a million a year or half a million a year, giving people bad information and perpetuating the problem, you don't want to give that up, you know?
That has been the standard. You know, it has since, gosh, February 13, 2006. You'll recall, we were told, we jumped on the phone right away with the UAIO. And what were we told? Don't worry, guys, give it 6, 8, you guys will be flying.
All right. And I thought it was, they said months, but I guess they meant years. And that puts us in, you know, where we are with the domestic industry. I really don't believe. I mean, another day, people don't want to talk about it. People don't want to badmouth the 1,000-pound gorilla in the room, being the DJI. But anybody thinks that there's going to be some American drone company that catches them and their market share is hitting the medicinal or recreational weed at this point without, you know, $1 billion in investment. Just not happening, in my estimation. What do you think?
There is no way. They've gotten way too far ahead of the game. And, you know, you and I have said this how many times, Patrick? They make a damn good product. You know, they listen to their users and they adapted and, you know, kind of now they've gotten to the point where they really don't have to make changes, but they can keep producing, you know, products that are, you know, cutting edge and that work well, and we're going to buy them. And now that, you know, we've got the economic deregulation to China that's about to occur, that's, you know, it's going to be wide open for them. And if you're thinking about getting into manufacturing an American-made UA, wow, good luck. You know, the old joke about, you know, how to make a small fortune in the UA business is to start with a big fortune.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we do have some contenders, and I mean, if you notice, if you go to their websites, you know, that they had, the FTC made them take down their Made in USA claims, because they were overstating that. And that's okay, too. You know, whatever. Caveat emptor and all the rest of that. But, you know, the other thing is that, you know, somebody else, and I really don't want to out the company, but, you know, oh, USA, you know, and somebody bought a crashed UA off of eBay, and they sent me pictures from the inside, and it's China. So, you know, and then we also had people talking about, you know, I'd say, you know, the labor cost in China trying to catch up, the regulatory, environmental, whatever. And, you know, DJI uses robots. Yeah, they use robots, but do all their suppliers using robots? Or are they using, you know, basically, say, cheap labor? You know, I don't want to go into the connotations of forced labor, but whatever. So, you know, you have a supply chain that is based on that. Very hard to, with the way the things are in Europe or America, to produce something at that price point. I'm not saying that we don't have the technology or can't make it happen. We just can't do it at that price point. And, you know, that also, you know, there's an article. I read the Chinese People's Daily every morning. That's where I go to first. And I may have mentioned that, maybe you heard that. And actually, you know, people laugh at it, but you want to get the news early, you go right there. And today they had they're doing this the story about weather modification with large drones. You know, I talked to Paul McCready over there at AeroVironment about doing this concept in the early 2000s. And, you know, here they are. China's leading the way. And remember, you know, 10 short years ago, China, it'll never happen. The Chinese will never be able to do anything. Yep. They laughed about the $1,000 Chinese UAV. They'll never be able to do anything as sophisticated. And then everybody laughed about the military drones and the full-size drones and all the rest of it. Well, you know, you're laughing, and they've got these products, and they're a quarter of the price of the legacy vendor products. So they're going to beat you at that game, too. I don't know if it's all blind eye or people are making money or, you know, aversion to reality. I really don't know.
Yeah. What you going to do, though, right?
Well, I mean, I think that they were totally underestimated, and I think that people in this country were riding on their laurels of the Cold War, you know, and how the rest of the world was. So, you know, whatever. And then, you know, and then I want to take an opportunity to beat up on the FAA. Everybody's like, hey, you can't beat up on the FAA, but this DAC thing. I want to come back to the DAC thing, and we're moving forward, and there's a lot of work that needs to be done on the DAC thing. And, you know, so they picked some people, and I'm not going to say they're qualified or unqualified. I did ask for the criteria for selection, but I've been asking for that for God knows how, probably the whole 4 years that the thing has been running or whatever, and nobody can provide it. And that's okay. But the idea, in my estimation, I mean, I sent an email back to the stakeholder representative at the over there at the USIO. And I did state that I know how to read a, 14 CFR part 107.31 waiver, unlike the co-chair of the DAC from Precision Hawk. You know, I don't understand how the FAA could, in good conscience, have an industry co-chair expert whose company was out of compliance with their waiver for over a year. And am I missing something? What do you think?
Well, you know, again, we're talking about the enforcement side of things, and that has always been weak.
Oh, well, they closed down the investigations and said no problem without even, you know, without reading logbooks. And this is the Pathfinder thing. The FAA was supposedly going to, you know, tap these people. The whole reason they were doing this is so they could get that data that they need to, you know, move the regulatory thing apart. So how does the FAA, with a straight face, say, oh, we didn't know this was going on for 15 or 18 months. Took us, you know, that long to fix the problem. And say you're collecting data. I don't understand. I'm missing that there's a disconnect that I'm missing here.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand. And explaining that disconnect is the $64,000 question, isn't it?
Well, it is, but I mean, you know, to any fair-minded person, I mean, it took to me, it looks like, you know, the DAC is damaged goods, this gentleman's damaged goods, but you still have them on there and running the show. The kicker on the deal is I posted that WAPO article on LinkedIn, and that had 35,000 views. Okay, and that was just recently. And I had actually another consultant beat me up. Well, you took this out of context. You didn't tell people this was from a few years ago. Like, the date's on the article, man. And I'm not hiding anything here. And the other issue with it is if you run a process that doesn't have any issues, then you don't have to be embarrassed by the history of the dysfunction. You know, I mean, does that make sense? I mean, I didn't do that. I didn't cover it up. I didn't do it in secret. I didn't let the Chinese toy company run their own, you know, subcommittee without memorializing it. That wasn't me. I didn't do that. I'm just paid for it. You know, so I think people either are, you know, trying to get in good graces, don't understand what's going on, or again, you know, don't want to give up on that work themselves out of a job thing. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, Patrick, again, you misconceptualize how that all came down, don't you know? That's okay. Not the way it came down. Okay, so you're again being a loose cannon, and you're pointing out inconvenient truths that you know, have other explanations.
See, that's why you're here, to help keep me grounded.
Sorry, but yeah, that's the way it is, Patrick, and you're just you're misconceptualizing things completely.
Yeah, there I was thinking about this whole safety of the NAS thing. Well, you know, that's fine too. I just think as it goes on, there's less and less, let's say, competence. And I do know, you know, to get things out quickly, I do post a lot of stuff on LinkedIn, and then it goes to the Twitter, whatever. A lot of private messages from people that are, you know, concerned about some of these same things, but unfortunately, they're just, I guess, afraid to speak up, you know. But on the other hand, you know, they have, you know, 6-figure a year plus jobs that aren't carving up chainsaw bears. So, you know, maybe that's why they want to keep quiet.
That's a career move that I'm considering, by the way. Chainsaw bears, yeah.
I know I got to get better at that personally. The chainsaw bears. There is a guy locally here. He's got a mobile chainsaw carving business. He'll come out to your house, carve up the stuff for you. Have you thought about that? It's a career move.
I'm gonna trade in all my drone equipment and buy me some custom chainsaws and convert my mobile command unit over to do that very thing. I think that's a hell of an idea.
It is, you know. Well, anyway, you know, it's a good conversation. I think we, you know, covered a lot of subjects. And moving forward, I mean, I wish I had something definitive. You know, you have anything that definitive for people to say, hey, if this is gonna happen, or we're gonna, you know. Do you have anything?
Oh, I you know, my crystal ball has been in the shop for about the last 2 years, and I'm not even going to go there.
Well, I would agree with you because I'm kind of out of predictions. I mean, I've been predicting this stuff just saying, hey, this is what's going to happen if you do this for a long time. And none of this should be a surprise to anyone. And if anyone's bewildered or wringing your hands or whatever else, there's plenty of historical data that kind of shows how this process works. So, you know, whatever you want to do with that. But anyway, thanks for coming in today to work and being on the podcast.
Yep.
and offering your insights and keeping me grounded and whatever else. And then, you know, we have some more interesting guests that we're going to have on this year. People have been asking more, well, you know, who's going to be on? We're working on that. So, again, thanks, Gene, and Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year to you. And let's not forget that I will be coming in and acting as your therapist here soon as well. So.
All right, free therapy. I like that. All right, well, that sounds good. And until next time, everyone, have a good one.
See ya.